Come one, come all, come gather around. Come hear tales both lost and found. Finally a show not about true crime. It's David and Michael's story time.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another exciting episode of Story Time. I'm your host who doesn't have a clever thing to say because I am shell-shocked by the events of the upcoming story. That's David Miller.
And the one who looks like a real slopper today, well, that's me, Michael Santel.
Oh, yeah, I guess I could have said that I was, like, headlining my new emo punk band because I have a little accidental faux hawk today.
That's exactly in the kitchen I said. In my mind, I was going to go, the one telling your story, the front man of an emo band who spells cute without the E, well, that's David Miller.
Yeah, that's me. I do look at, like, and I kind of like it, actually. I don't mind the look.
I like it that it's happened this way. I think you should do it more often. I feel like you should do it less often than you want to do it. Like you're allowed to do it.
And I would need to get like product or something to like make it stay that way, I guess, unless I just accidentally get this weird almost bedhead look naturally. But like I haven't put something in my hair in
since the 7th grade.
I want to say 20 years. Yeah.
It's time for you to put some product in your hair. I think I'm a slopper because I have to wear a different outfit tonight. I feel like this is my B-shirt because it's missing this button right here.
Yeah.
If this button's undone, you look like a professional. When this button's undone, you look like you drink during the day.
You look like a cool children. Kid. You don't look like a schlub. You just look like
a
guy
very schlubby.
He's a little bit loosey-goosey.
I feel a little loosey-goosey.
Good.
Speaking of loosey-goosey, David.
Speaking of...
David, I am ready to be emotionally traumatized.
Listen, this is so okay. So yes, we are here. We are new Animorphs. We are on Megamorphs number 3. The title being Elfangor's Secret. But yeah, so it is. Oh man, I've now had to go through this book like twice in the last week and a half, and good. Lord.
The first time was to get all the tears out of your body. The second time was to write notes.
What I usually do is I read through it like a book because I want to just get the impact of the story as you read the story. And then the second time, I go through it and I take notes chapter by chapter. So the second time I had to go through it even longer and in more detail. But this is, I'm just going to say to everyone at home and to you, strap in because it is quite a time.
Strap on. I'm ready to go. My lesson my pre-prediction, if you will, is I have found in these stories is that our children will be emotionally and physically devastated, which will only be mental scars because the physical reality will change back to some level of normality.
Okay, sure. And I think I did show you the picture before, but it's basically the front cover is just all of our main group, the five kids and Axe standing there, and then the inside cover is all of them in their like battle morphs. But in the background, you can see like a zeppelin and
the
like,
Hindenburg
planes, and explosions and stuff.
Okay, so if the kids don't get transported back to World War II and fight Nazis, and we find out that Visser was actually Goebbels or some shit like that, which really tracks FYI, right? Of like doing, or like Mengele, like if that guy was an alien, that tracks. I think our kids will get some new souped up battle morphs, but only during this adventure.
Okay.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the secret is that the Visser loved an Andalite and that there's some
secret.
Not like Romeo and Juliet, but like close to that.
Sure.
Like an unrequited love.
Sure, yeah.
And one of the kids dies, but is
brought... He put that in quotes, by the way, in like finger quotes.
But is brought back. They are presumed to be dead, but we find out, no, it's okay. They're going to make it.
Okay. Solid predictions across the board. I won't tell you which are right and which are wrong.
Thank you.
I really liked the prediction of Visser 3 like having a secret unrequited love for an Andalite. That would be so scandalous.
And I'll take it even further and say that we will find that he has empathy for something that we would never have thought of. Like, what do you mean? Now, usually these secrets are they fuck up in some way and didn't kill somebody or didn't hit the destroy the world button. So I wouldn't be, if I'm wrong in that regard, that's fine. But I think that's what it's going to be.
Okay. And just a quick recap, the last Animorphs episode we had was book 29 called The Sickness, which was when Axe comes down with a strange sickness.
They went to that conference. They went to the music conference. They're like, come on to get down with the sickness. And they're all dancing, having a great time.
They went to a school dance, yes.
That's right.
And at the same time, the Yerk that Cassie had, like, made that deal with and was, like, in charge of, like, the Yerk peace force or whatever.
They killed them.
They got captured and they had to go rescue it. But then everybody got sick except Cassie and she had to do it herself and perform brain surgery on Axe. And it was a whole thing. That won't come into play during this book at all.
Had a teary... Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I love that you... Yeah. And then they have a teary goodbye inside of their mind. Inside of their minds.
Yes. And then they gave the Yerk the power to morph with the condition that they morph one time and then be stuck that way. And they chose a humpback whale.
Which I did not like, which you predicted. Not care for which that I ending. Liked. Yeah. Which I liked that you knew that about me. Mm-hmm. I do like that they... In hindsight... They chose, I believe the kids have transgressed. I believe that the dolphins and the whales are sentient beings. At this point, I feel like that line is way too wiggly.
Yeah, and that is definitely something that they have to consider and they have considered before. But okay, here we go. We're going to jump in to Megamorphs number 3, Elfangor's Secret.
Also, the kids are going to be on a field trip.
Okay. The point of view for this book, like all Megamorph books we've had, is everyone.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say the Elemist. Okay.
It switches around chapter to chapter, which makes it very hard to tell as one cohesive story to you secondhand.
Sure. Well, listen, it's time for you to weave all those threads together.
Oh, we've got notes. Notes for days. So here we go. It starts with a prologue, which is not from anyone's point of view.
Is it like a space prologue, like in the Dune books?
Kind of. It's sort of like, it's just like, oh, remember Elfangor. Basically, all the prologue does is it reminds us that Prince Elfangor, Axe's older brother, and Tobias's father, we saw this happen in the Andalite Chronicles, had hidden the time matrix on Earth somewhere.
I forgot. About the time, man. I forgot she about sure the did. Super high science fiction fantasy.
What they will say in this book and have before as the most powerful thing in, like, all the universe.
This is the thing that took them to that weird battle world, right? That was inside of outside of time?
Yep. Exactly. Yep.
Where they went to that weird McDonald's.
Yes, yes, with the person with no eyes.
Yeah.
And a face made entirely of acne.
And you could buy that as a Happy Meal toy now. I believe that was one of the adult
the no
Happy
eye
Meal
acne
toys.
Face person. Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh. So he had hidden the time matrix on Earth. Now, when he did so, it was in an empty place where there was just like trees and shit around. There wasn't like nothing was built there. It was just and he buried it under the ground. And then when he returned to Earth years later, dying, right, and desperately trying to get to the time matrix so he could like. Essentially use it to not die and go back and stuff. And that's where he ended up landing at the construction site where he met our main kids and died and gave them the power, right? To morph.
Which
implies that...
Right.
The construction site would be
where this book is up into that moment then, right? Like, this is the moment before?
Well, the prologue is basically that moment before.
Got
it. Of, like, him landing there being like, I gotta get to the time matrix. Ugh, I can't get there in time. Hey, 5 kids, let's give them the power. Blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
But what that implies is that the time matrix where he buried it might be under this construction site.
Oh.
Or at least nearby.
I was about to say, I did not put that together, so thank you for spelling that out for me.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So somewhere within the vicinity of whatever. Now, can you tell me, has the construction site been completed?
No.
Okay, great. Okay, so somewhere in this, like, general housing development.
Yeah, yeah. And it was also where they originally had rehidden the blue box that gives them
morphing
power.
Yes, the second time.
But they've changed that location since.
Because of David. Yeah, that piece David of shit. It.
That motherfucker.
Yeah.
all right. So then we start.
Prepare yourself.
And we start the first chapter is from Tobias's point of view, and it sounds pretty normal. Hey, I'm Tobias. I'm stuck as a bird. It's a beautiful sunny day. I love flying on the thermals. It almost makes you forget that we're in a war against the Yurks. So, but then as that's, you're like, okay, this sounds normal. And you almost, as a reader, kind of start to gloss over because of how normal it is. He then says something along the lines of like, and the only thing that can make a day like this better is if I was hanging out with Melissa, the beautiful girl who I love and is great and blah, blah, blah. And as a reader, you're like, who the fuck is Melissa? I've never heard that
name. He's never once mentioned Melissa.
Exactly. It should be Rachel that he's talking about. Surely, I remember as a kid picking up this book, reading the first chapter or two and being like, did I miss something? What is going on? And I put it down for like weeks and was like trying to figure out if I had missed a book. And then I didn't.
An alternate universe. Continue.
Mentioned someone named Melissa. And then the end of the chapter kind of drops, sort of drops a bomb on us right away. And you go, oh. So it says, and yes, we were probably even losing the last war that humanity might ever fight as a free species. But on a stunning day like this, what I saw spread out below me was not possible controllers, but people having a nice day at the beach, loving the sun, loving the warmth, taking it easy. Even the slaves, standing by to attend their masters and mistresses, seem to be having a good time.
It's a slave book! Oh no!
So, okay. So there's a meeting at the barn.
The slave barn?
Of the Animorphs at Cassie's barn, okay?
Of the free folk?
So, but the, before they can have the meeting, they have to wait for Cassie's slave girl to leave. Now, she is mostly deaf, but is still smart, so they, you know, deaf people can still tell stories, right?
Yeah, well, they have to sign them out, I think. I don't know how it works. I don't know how that world works.
Marco shows up and is like, sorry I'm late. We just got Pong. Have you guys heard about this? It's so amazing.
And by we, he's implying himself and his slave?
He's implying himself, his father, and his mother.
Oh, what?
Everything is different. Rachel isn't even there at the barn. Melissa is, whoever this Melissa girl is.
Who's Melissa?
Jake. Well,
Prince Jake?
Prince Jake. And I have in my notes here, I say it gets slightly uncomfortably racist, and then I crossed out the word slightly.
Alright, let me hear about some racism from the 90s, David. Oh,
This is from going. Jake's point of view, okay? I had long suspected that Cassie might have slightly radical tendencies. A lot of blacks did. Blacks and a lot of Jews, although not my family. My dad was a certified POE, Patriot of Empire.
Still,
if you had any Jewish blood in you at all, you had to be extra careful so no one thought you were a radical. I knew Cassie was soft-hearted toward her own slaves, but I'd never heard her make any kind of subversive remarks about the war. I'd always just assumed she was sentimental.
So this is a reality where the Civil War happened.
You don't know.
Okay.
But what it does look like is Jake is like a little mini-Nazi, like a little Hitler youth almost.
David, I thought they were going to go back in time to Nazis. They're just current Nazis!
So this kind of goes on for a little bit until finally a voice comes out going, oh, yes, perfect. I love it. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And it's the Drood.
The other elemental being
the, like,
that
impish
fucks with people.
Guy who works for the Krayak, who is the Elemist's like main rival or whatever.
Do we know what he looks like?
Yes, we've had him described before, but I'll describe him again here, I suppose.
I also believe that he was an anti-Semitic
I'm not sure. I don't think that that is, even when you hear this. So, it looked at first glance like the mating of a small dinosaur and a large prune. It had two legs and balanced its body with a stubby tail. Its hands were weak, flimsy things with too many joints. The head didn't fit with the bird-like body. It was humanoid in shape with a narrow lower jaw and big, mocking eyes. The skin was wrinkled like a prune. The flesh was dark, almost jet black, relieved only by green that rimmed the eyes and mouth.
And classic anti-Semitic stereotypes. Jews have tails, they lay eggs. I can't believe I'm on this podcast dispelling this information. This is really a carryover from last week with those designs you kept trying, you kept wanting me to look at.
This is so awful. So they do not recognize the Drode. They're like, okay, who the fuck are you, right? And the Drode says, well, as much fun as it is to see you all this way, I suppose for us to move on, I'll have to return you, temporarily at least, to your usual condition. Sanctimonious, self-righteous, and utterly tedious. There was no flash of light, no bang, nothing changed, except that everything changed. This is, again, from Jake's point of view. I changed. Suddenly and instantly, I was a different person. I stared at the Drode, and I knew now who he was, and what he was, and whom he served. I shot a look at Cassie, and then the girl standing beside her. Melissa was gone, and Rachel was there. So glad you're back with us, Rachel, the Drode leered. You know you're still my favorite Animorph. What was all that? Marco demanded mid-morph. Some kind of hallucination? No, the Drode said. It is glorious reality. Big Jake, Jake the perfect leader, Jake the compassionate, nothing more than a jumped-up little dictator with delusions of grandeur who insists on being called the supreme leader. Which was true. He said that. He told Axe to shut up because he was the supreme leader. And Cassie says, no, that was not reality. I do not own a slave. That is sickening. What are you talking about? And where was I? Rachel demanded. I was thinking how I'd have to turn Cassie in for not approving some war down in Brazil, I admitted. That is not reality. I will tell you about reality, the Drode said eagerly. Your country is an empire ruled by terror and torture. It has made war on the nations to the south. It slaughters peoples it calls primitives. It enslaves anyone with an IQ below 80, as well as anyone born with what you call defects. All in all, it's my kind of place. That's bull, Marco said hotly. Oh, I assure you it's all true. The Yerks are within months of consolidating control. The lack of freedom among humans has made their conquest ever so much easier. Your few books, your two radio stations, your single television channel, all censored. Your technology is 50 years behind where it should be. Poverty is widespread. Curable diseases run rampant. Some women are forced to breed to repopulate the dominant white race, while at the same time, in the major cities, the poor and homeless are rounded up and shot. Jake, let me take care of this little worm, Rachel said. What's this all about, I asked. I wasn't at all sure I wouldn't take Rachel up on the offer. The Time Matrix, the Drode said. It exists. It was found by a lowly human controller who uses the name John Berryman. He's an actor, not a very successful one. A lowly controller whose Yerk was, until he lost the battle for Lyra, none other than Visser IV. And why did he lose the Battle of Lyra? Why? Because of all of you! Ironic, eh? If you remember, the Battle of Lyra was where they ended up when they, like... I think it was when they morphed Mosquito, and then their, like, excess mass in Z-Space got hit by a ship.
Yes. That's part of Dinosaurs, right?
No. That was not the dinosaur one. That was a totally separate book.
Okay.
But they like ended up on like the other side of space on an Andalite ship that was going to the planet Lyra with those like telepathic frog guys.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was the whole Battle of Lyra, and the Yerks essentially lost that battle because of the Animorphs. So what does this have to do with all the other stuff? The Yerk, the former Visser IV, has used the Time Matrix. He has traveled backward in time and is changing historical events. He's rewritten the past in an effort to bring about a Yerk victory and give himself greater power. You, well, the other yous, are unaware that life was ever any different. You've all been raised in an environment of delightfully ferocious oppression. It's all quite wonderful. But slavery? Some genocidal war? Cassie said, her voice cracking. Why are you here? Rachel demanded. The Drode sighed. Sadly, I am here to offer you the chance to undo it all. He spread his hands wide and smiled a hideous smile. I want to help.
Yeah, that's not... Okay.
So, the Drode basically tells them that the Krayak and the Elemist have made a deal. Because neither of them approves of some fucking Yerk just having control of the most powerful thing in the universe, the Time Matrix.
Yeah, I love that the other elemental gods are like, who does that fucking mortal think he is? That guy can't do what we do.
Yeah. And they also do not trust each other with it, because Jake was like, well, couldn't the Krayak just, like, take the Time Matrix? And then I think it's Axe or Tobias is like, well, that's probably against whatever agreement they have with each other to, like, keep the rules of whatever their engagement is, because they can never directly fight each other.
So they have agreed to download the children's consciousnesses into this other reality.
Kinda.
Okay. And also, poor Melissa. Where the fuck is Melissa? Who knows where Melissa is?
But I'll tell you in a second. We'll get to where Rachel was.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned a deal, Marco said. Yes, a deal. And here it is. The six of you will be allowed to follow the Time Matrix. The former Visser IV set off on his journey 2 days ago. You will be translated back to that point, and then and the quanta that make up your atoms will be tuned. Yes, that's a good word for simple minds to comprehend. You'll be fine-tuned at a subatomic level to resonate with the movements of the Time Matrix as it travels through time. Your own memories and personalities will, of course, be buffered, protected against changes.
We're going portal hopping!
Resulting in the effect that, like an echo, you will follow the Time Matrix. It plucks the cords of time and you reverberate. Brilliantly explained, eh? So, the only thing about this deal, though, is that the Krayak demands a price.
What's the price?
The life of one of you. That is my Master Krayak's price. One of you must die.
Oh, okay.
Beginning of the book, hitting you with a promise.
Gotta love it. One of the kids is gonna die, maybe. Mm-hmm.
One of the six, one of the Animorphs.
Yeah, but it's not gonna be real death, David, but it's gonna be a death all the same.
Sure.
I fucking knew it. I knew one of these kids was gonna die.
We are a little over halfway through the entire series.
Yeah, and they're always almost dead every book, so it's a pretty good prediction at this point.
And then I have in my notes, a side note, they reveal that in the other racist world where Rachel was, she wasn't there because she was in a re-education camp.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And she does not take that news very well.
No, she does not.
The Drode is like, oh, you were somewhere being taught your place. And she's like, my fucking what? Like,
she swings at him and he just floats over her head. Back
and he like disappears and reappears somewhere. Yeah. So the Drode then tells them they have 2 minutes to decide if they are going to say yes or no to this deal.
Okay, they're going to say yes to the deal, but they're basically going to argue about it for 2 minutes.
They do start arguing about it. Marco says no. Not our problem. And Rachel gets mad and is like, what the fuck are you talking about? We can't let the world be like we just saw.
It's all the anything doing with aliens in space is absolutely on your docket to do.
Cassie understands why Marco was initially saying no. And it's not for any like selfish reason like that of like, ugh, not my problem, not actually my, like, that's the excuse he's saying. She understands that the Krayak hates Jake specifically because of the stuff that happened in the Legoland book.
Yes. Both of the Legoland books.
Yeah. Well, one of them was non-canon because it was your choices in the Legoland.
My choices matter, David. I got 100% on that test. It matters.
Marco and Cassie, Marco especially, understood right away that Jake assumed he would be the one to die.
Right.
And Marco doesn't care for his best friend dying, right? And so that's like his initial pushback, and Cassie gets it, and they have like a moment where they like lock eyes and are and kind of like nod at each other of like, we both understand that like Jake is basically signing his own death warrant voluntarily for this. And
because Jake has also signed his own death in the past when things like this has happened, he has been the person to step up multiple times now.
They kind of have a moment, Cassie and Marco, like, to themselves, where essentially Cassie is like, Krayak is not going to get him. And Marco's like, you got that right. Hell yeah. Like, basically they have a secondary objective on this mission of make sure Jake doesn't die.
Right.
Right. They agree to go on this mission and immediately are like somewhere else. Like, they're like, I think Rachel's even like, okay, well, like, let me get a chance to go get a change of clothes so that I can, whoop, and then they're like somewhere else.
I love that the Drode has no pomp and circumstance. Things happen and don't happen. There's no...
The Elemis does that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So where they are is it's somewhere very dark and it's raining. Rachel and Cassie suddenly find themselves in front of, quote, a very large man on a very large horse wearing very steel armor.
Mm.
And this knight yells something to them in French. The word is actually, oh damn, I didn't look up the French pronunciation of this. Sorcière?
Oh no, he thinks the ladies are sorcières?
And when he hears them speaking English to each other, like, oh my god, where are we? What the hell? What did he just say? I don't know, I don't speak much French, like that kind of stuff. He yells, Anglais! Espions! Basically, and they figure out that means English spies.
Oh, no! Espions. I had no idea this was going to be a spy tale as well. So the Night-Night thinks that they're spies.
Yeah. Another knight rocks up, and Rachel just starts to morph elephant. Because she's like, well, I'm not going to let these knights just fuck with us.
I love that in terms of history, they're like, oh, I'm a, I'm a sorcerer. Like, just instant elephant in front of these dudes.
Yeah. The knights.
He then says, sacre bleu, right? Yeah. Like, he sees an elephant.
The knights charge them. And Cassie, like, dodges out of the way and immediately starts morphing to wolf. They don't know where the others are, so we don't know where Ash
just
and Jake
like
and
the classic French movie Brotherhood of the Wolf, where they kung fu fight wolves.
So they don't know where the others are. They have a little fight with the knights. Cassie ends up pinning one, and Rachel has the other like in her trunk and is like waving them around. Although sure. Rachel did get a little stabbed, but she's an elephant, so she's
sure,
like,
she
mostly
can take a couple
okay.
more stabs. Yeah.
Jake and Marco show up in human morph.
Okay.
And
well, that's just, not human morph. They're just they're
well, in human form. Then okay, Jake and Marco show up, and Jake is like pissed because he and Marco, like when they appeared, they were like in the middle of this camp of like all these soldiers, right?
Right.
And they managed to very sneakily get through and out of the camp without drawing any attention. And he was like so stoked that they managed to finally like pull something off where it didn't just go to shit right away. And as soon as they get out of the camp, he hears an elephant wail. And like, and he's just like, God damn it.
Listen, not everyone can roll a stealth check, okay?
And Rachel is like, well, they started it, you know? Sure. Axe and Tobias show up as birds. Tobias, because that's his normal zone, and Axe, because he decided to.
Yeah.
And it looks like they are kind of in between two armies.
The French and the English?
The French and the English. One of the knights that they, like, have now, either pinned or in custody, essentially, does speak English, with a French accent, albeit. And so they ask him, basically, like, when are we? And he tells them that it is the year of our Lord, 1415.
1415.
And we are in a war between the French and the English. But no one here in the Animorphs knows, like, what's supposed to happen. Like, I don't know how this is supposed to turn out. Like, what?
Yeah,
like,
they're in middle school. They haven't taken European AP yet.
Yeah. So they morph birds to, like, okay, well, we got to look around and see where this Visser IV guy is. But we also don't know what he looks like. Or I guess we can look for where the Time Matrix is. But we also don't know what that looks like. Right. So they're kind of flying around being like, I don't know what to do. And they're flying around. They do it for a couple hours, like enough time to like have to land, demorph, remorph, and all that kind of stuff until like it's like dawn or just barely dawn. And I think it's Marco is flying over and noticing. And they're all noticing, but Marco's like talking to us about it, saying like everyone they see and everything they see is just gross. Like, you see all these paintings and stuff of these times of knights and stuff, and everybody's all, like, flowy hair and looking majestic on horses, and just all these people in these armies are like...
dirty, smelly,
scabs,
bloody.
Pockmarked with smallpox scars and missing or rotting teeth. Like, they said they're all birds of prey, so they can see, like, the absolute colonies of lice and things that are in their hair.
Sure.
Marco figures out, hey, Visser IV, this guy, probably wouldn't be gross like everybody from this time.
That's
we gotta be looking for someone like clean with like good teeth.
Gotta find a clean boy.
He's an actor even, so you know. They do end up finding the English king. Like in one of the two camps, they like fly over and see a guy with axes. Like, hey, there's a guy with like a metal like ring on his head, and they're like, oh, that's probably a fucking crown. Like, that's the king.
Charles William, who is it? Alfred.
I'll tell you right now, since I do know, but the kids won't find out till later. It's I think it's a Henry
Richard?
III or Richard. It might be Richard actually. It's the Battle of. I'll tell you. They'll find out later, but it's the Battle of Agincourt, which is what a Shakespeare play was about. I want to say Richard III.
Okay. I was going to say, I do not know. Yeah, I don't know battles in Europe, so okay, yeah. Whatever.
They also see that the French army greatly outnumbers the English army.
Okay.
Like 4-1. They spot Visser IV, I can't remember who. Someone spots Visser IV, like, in amongst the ranks of the archers. It was like, oh, there's a guy who clearly looks not of this time.
Sure, you know what I mean? Sure, yeah.
I mean, he's wearing the same outfit, but, like, he looks different.
Sure.
Both sides are marching towards each other. And Marco is kind of flying over and seeing all of this happening.
Right, looking with his bird eyes. Yes. He has no missing teeth. All of his eyes are intact.
Yes, exactly. Marco sees them all marching together towards each other and realizes almost at the last possible second, uh-oh, because he then sees, like, thousands of archers pull back their bows, aim them up into the air.
They know about this conflict in some way. They're shooting the birds.
They're shooting at the other army, right?
Oh, okay. You
fire all your arrows off at the approaching army.
I thought he was,
it just
like
happens to be that Marco, a bird, is in the zone where all these arrows are gonna okay, got be it, flying. Got it. So Marco gets out of the way, although one does, like, fly through and pierce his wing, but it, like, flies through it. So he's, like, kind of still going, just a little shaky. But he, like, dives under, or, like, gets out of the way, my note is, Marco gets out of the way but can perfectly see with Osprey eyes what happens when thousands of arrows hit thousands of people.
Sure.
So he can see in, like, perfect detail as people are just being struck and pierced all over the place by arrows below him. He tries to dive under another volley of arrows, but his wing that was wounded kind of gives out, and so he fails the dive and just crashes into mud, just like right into the ground. Rachel swoops down as a bald eagle to try to grab him.
Also, gross mud. The grossest of mud.
Yes.
Human blood, animal poop, regular poop, those feces and stuff like that. It's all gross mud.
Yeah. So Rachel swoops down to grab him, but thanks to, like, the mud and all that, she only gets a few feet, and, like, they're not going to get airborne. And soldiers on both sides are now rushing the field, and they're, like, right in the middle of it. And they see, Rachel sees a familiar horse all of a sudden come out from the woods and start, like, sprinting towards them. And she's like, that's Cassie! And so the armies clash as Cassie runs by, and Rachel and Marco, like, as birds, hop up and grab with talons onto the horse's, like, front legs.
Sure.
And she just tries to, like, push them through this battle. But then Cassie gets speared in the haunch and, like, falls over. And Rachel's wing snaps, and they're kind of stuck in the mud under this horse that's also wounded. And Tobias, like, sees that happening and is starting to freak the fuck out. And is like, oh my god, we've got to save Rachel. We've got to save, like, this is not okay. And Jake is like, we can't go in there. Like, if they demorph to human, they'll be killed. If we go down there, we're going to get fucked up. We need to figure out what's going on with Visser IV. They see Visser IV aiming an arrow. He's now in a tree, readying a bow, and Visser IV is aiming at the English king.
To just cut off the head of the snake.
Yeah. He misses the first shot, and Tobias is the only one that's, like, anywhere close to where this is happening. Like, Axe and Jake are kind of, like, elsewhere because they've been, like, searching around. He fires again, and Tobias is, like, still, like, trying to be like, I want to go save Rachel, but it's like, ah, fuck, fine. He dives and catches the arrow out of the air. And at that point, he sees this guy, Visser IV, kind of, like, look at him, and he can see very clearly that he, like, scowls to himself, like, ugh, and a light. Because clearly, a hawk is not going to swoop down and just fucking grab this arrow out of the, right? Like,
once you have the awareness of morphing animals from aliens, you assume that's what's going on.
Yeah. Marco and Rachel are taking shelter under Cassie, the horse, right? But Cassie is hurt. They're all hurt. Jake calls out to her in Thospeak and says, don't worry, the cavalry is coming. These people are all very superstitious, right? Well, we're going to give them a devil. And out from the woods
comes
a war horse, which is Jake. He acquired and morphed a war horse. And Tobias riding him as a Hork-Bajir with blades and horns and, you know.
Just terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Axe, as a bird still, is chasing Visser 4. After the arrow got caught, he jumped down out of the tree and is running towards, like, a small village, like, on the other side of the tree line.
And in French, all the soldiers start yelling, El Diablo! El Diablo!
So Axe is chasing Visser 4. Visser 4 runs into a church.
Yeah, because you can't follow him. You get sanctuary in a church.
Well, the demon, Hork-Bajir and stuff, they're in the battle trying to save Marco and Axe. The only one that's following Visser 4 at the moment is Axe and Birdmorph.
Okay.
So he slashes him in the head, but is like, I can't stop him as a harrier. He's a human. I'm a bird, sure. Right? So after he runs into a church, Axe figures, oh, he must have the Time Matrix in there. Like, he must be running to the Time Matrix. So he lands at the door to demorph. And as he is, the villagers start seeing and then reacting to this Andalite growing out of a bird in front of the church.
El Diablo! El Diablo!
Marco, Cassie, and Rachel manage to get clear of the battle and all of the confusion to start demorphing and so they can heal and rejoin. Jake and Tobias race towards where Axe is, Jake on, as a horse. They show up just in time to save Axe. Tobias, like, jumps off of Jake and, like, over the crowd of people and kind of, like, makes them back off and grabs a pitchfork from one of them and is even like, well, if they didn't think I was a devil, I definitely look like one now.
Right.
You know, opens the door for Axe, and he and Axe push through the door. Jake is still outside as a horse. Nobody seems to think that a horse is terrible, right?
Horses are not out of place. They know what a horse is.
And so they like follow him up through the like tower, like up the stairs going up, and they burst through a door. And
there he is, laughing, holding the Time Matrix. He turns it in a clockwise fashion and they instantly teleport somewhere.
And there before me was the deadliest thing ever created. It was a shimmering, featureless globe, almost as tall as I was. And Visser 4 had his hands pressed against it, a look of concentration on his face. He smiled at me. So, the Andalites pursue me still, he sneered. I was careless. I did not expect to be pursued, but I'll be careful now, yes. And you know what? It's better this way. I have the power now. I have the power. This is Tobias speaking. I lunged. The globe shimmered. Visser 4 grinned. My blades flashed on emptiness.
He teleported. He's gone.
He did. So then we kind of jump over to Jake's point of view, and Jake suddenly finds himself, still as a horse, but somewhere else. It's still kind of dark. It's still pretty cold. And he hears someone be like, hey, where'd that horse come from? And someone else respond like, don't reckon I know, Tom.
I'm just thinking in my head out loud.
Yeah.
What is the mechanism of traveling? Oh, because they're
when
in tune.
When he travels.
They're in tune with the thing. So whenever he time jumps, they time jump. So he's not technically that far from them, but they're now in a new place.
So what they figure is whenever they end up, he must be somewhere around here.
Got it. Okay.
Right. And who knows when they show up in relation to when he shows up.
Got
it. Because they're following as like a ripple effect, essentially, or an echo is the way they put it.
Sure.
So a little while after. But yeah. So someone's like, hey, where'd that horse come from? And someone's like, don't reckon I know, Tom. but they are speaking English. And they're on the muddy banks of a river. It's cold at night.
The mighty Mississippi is what I think it is, David.
He hears someone mention the Hessians.
Those are German mercenaries.
And he cannot quite remember what that means. He knows he's heard that word before, but he can't quite remember.
I know that term from the hit movie Sleepy Hollow by Tim Burton.
Jake calls in thought speak to everyone, but no one answers. And then the men are kind of moving around him to allow, apparently, the general by, who is coming by.
Here comes the general!
And as he passes, Jake hears someone say the name Washington.
George Washington's going home!
And Marco, in human form, comes up beside Jake. So he couldn't thought speak back in response because he was human already. And comes back and is like, do you know who the fuck that is? And they're like, oh my god, yeah, that's George Washington. Marco had stolen boots, because Jake looks down and sees that he's wearing boots, from George Washington's tent. He's wearing George Washington's spare boots.
But it's so cold there in Valley Forge. He needs those boots.
Rachel calls out and is in owl morph above everyone. And they figure out, okay, they must be at the Delaware crossing.
Sure.
Like Washington crossing the Delaware. And Jake tells Rachel to look out for Visser 4, probably because Washington is the target. I'm assuming. If he was trying to kill the king in that last place. Sure. Maybe he's trying to like disrupt history by
and it tracks
with this.
Because of the slave the Handmaid's Tale slave world. Yeah. Obviously, other dominoes would need to happen to make that world possible.
Yeah. So Rachel then sees Cassie appear as Marco leads Horse Jake into the woods to demorph. Cassie appears as human form. Rachel fills her in on what's happening. There are soldiers loading into boats on the river, and Cassie decides, I'll go dolphin in the water. That'll, like, give us coverage in the river.
Sure, sure.
And Tobias and Axe pop up and are on the other shore and are like, and they get filled in on things. And Axe kind of is like, oh, hey, there are armed men over here on this side. And Rachel's like, yeah, they've been crossing for a while, I think. So that's probably the quote unquote good guys. That's the, you know. That's them. It's all good. And Axe seems a little unsure and hesitant, but everyone's like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Let's look for Visser 4. So Marco and Jake are now human morph and load into a boat with a few of the other soldiers.
These soldiers really are young, aren't they?
I mean, in the Revolutionary War, many were.
Many were 12-year-olds. Just like in that Mel Gibson movie, The Patriot.
Listen, don't get me started on The
Patriot.
That
young boy took off in the woods, David, and he got himself killed because of it.
If you want to hear me talking about The Patriot, you can go and see that other podcast I did where I talked for 2.5 hours about The Patriot.
David loves The Patriot.
Marco notes how different everyone seems from, like, the famous paintings you see of, like, Washington crossing the Delaware. It's cold, there's snow and sleet and water, and everyone's huddled over and tired and
it's freezing, it's cold.
They're about a dozen feet to one side from Washington's boat.
Okay.
And so they're just like, wow, amazing, how cool is this, you know? Like Tobias said, the man, Jake said. Know him, know us, maybe. Yeah, and Visser 4 could be in his boat right now. Jake nodded. Rachel's on it. This is from the point of view of Marco. Rachel's on it. Hey, we're almost there. Gee, I hate to see this pleasure cruise come to... Pop, 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 pop! A horizontal line of flame erupted, blinding in the darkness. 20, 30, who knew how many ancient muskets, all firing at once, a disciplined volley. I couldn't see the damage done, but I heard the cries. Turn back, someone screamed. A second volley. Pop, 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 pop! Again, exploding powder drew that awful horizontal line.
Also, it's not like the bullets come all at once. You hear like the it's a chaotic event.
Yeah, and it's from the other shore. Like the shore that they are boating towards all of a sudden opens up and
volley of bullets come at them.
50, 60, 100 explosions. 100 balls flying, singing through the air. Thunk. The man sitting in front of me fell back. His head dropped on my lap. Ah, I yelled. Thunk. An oar was blown in half. Thunk. A hole appeared in Jake's forehead.
Shh. Jake just got shot in the head! Don't cover your face, David. You're not running away from this.
Jake fell straight back without a twitch or movement, simply collapsed, a puppet whose strings had been cut. This is now from Rachel's point of view, looking from the air.
Right.
Marco lunged across the boat to grab him. I saw the hole. It was centered on Jake's forehead. The back of his head was gone. There was no possible question.
Just like...
Jake was dead.
Just like JFK. It happened in a very similar manner. I knew that there was multiple shooters, David. I've been saying it for years.
The people that Axe saw on
were the
other side of the shore were the Hessians who had been... waiting in ambush, warned ahead of time by Visser 4.
By Visser 4.
Mm-hmm. Rachel yells for Cassie and tells her, because she's in the water as a dolphin, and tells her that she has to find Jake's body because it had fallen into the water.
Oh,
and that's how Cassie finds out that Jake is dead.
Right, which she is not, she's going to be none too pleased about.
Rachel sees George Washington get hit in the arm by a bullet.
That didn't happen canonically.
No, it did not. What do we do? Tobias asked. Do? I didn't know. Attack, I blurted. The Hessians, attack them. Rachel, Axe said. These Hessian humans are only doing what... But my doubt was gone. Attack, yes. They killed Jake, I snapped. And they're trying to get Washington. They could kill Marco. They die. Do you hear me, Andalite? They killed your prince. Do your duty.
Oh, jeez Louise. Instantly to like his like alien programming of like a subjugated person. You're right, my king.
Yeah.
Does Axe tear through the woods with a blade just snapping necks left and right?
Axe goes in Andalite form through the line of Hessians, but he's knocking them out as he's going through, like, you know, hitting him with the side of his tail blade.
Sure.
Because he doesn't want to kill him. But then he gets spotted by an officer who starts directing troops to, like, fire at him. So he leaps over them.
And the Germans start going, Sacrebleu! El Diablo!
He leaps over them to strike at the officer, knowing that he's not going to have to, like, he can't just knock this guy out. He's going to have to kill him. And he attacks, and that's where the chapter ends. So we don't know how that plays out, because then we switch point of view to someone else.
Who do we go to?
To Cassie, who is searching frantically under the water for Jake's body, echolocating, but there are many bodies in the water.
Yeah, and also there's all that singing going on.
In the river, in the Delaware River.
Under the Delaware River!
She finds him and starts to push him to the riverbank, bullets hitting the water around her, and then she is somewhere else.
The drone has taken her to make a decision.
There are no boats. There's sunlight shining through the water.
Oh,
Jake's
they,
body that she had, like she was flipped. Pushing, is just gone, and she's somewhere else now. She surfaces. It is another time jump. She surfaces to see, like, what's going on, and finds dozens of sailing ships kind of around her with big sails and stuff. And Cassie kind of starts to crumble. The weight of Jake's death sort of drives her to sort of just give in to the dolphin's mind and let go, because the dolphin is happy to be here in, like, the open water, essentially, right? Tobias, meanwhile, back in the Delaware time, was flying, watching as Axe is about to go kill this officer, and then suddenly has to veer off and turn really quick because he's about to run into a sail that all of a sudden appears in front of him. He flies into a cabin window on this ship and sees a map in English on the table, pointing out where they are, and it is close to Spain, somewhere near a place called Trafalgar.
Is this the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria?
No.
Okay.
I believe this will be, it has to do with Lord Admiral Nelson of the British Navy fighting,
I don't remember who, love Spanish history, and when you tell me this shit that I don't know, I realize how fucking dumb I am.
So Tobias in that cabin morphs to human. And then we cut to someone else's point of view, and we find Marco is with Axe, and they are somewhere cramped and kind of dimly lit, clearly on some kind of ship or something. And there's, like, they're, like, kind of in this small little place, and they're penned in there with, like, almost like walls of rope kind of around them.
Okay.
Like, kind of going all over throughout, like, part of the ship. And so he immediately throws up, thinking about seeing his best friend's head get blown out.
Understood. So the time jump happens. We're now all dealing with that fact, and everyone's dealing
Marco,
with
it. Marco was literally on a boat in the middle of the Delaware River, like, going through this, and then suddenly just finds himself in a quiet, dimly lit room.
And instantly just goes,
up. He climbs up to peek through the ropes and sees two men. One, I think it was described as one Asian man and then another white man coming up behind him. The Asian man had a small barrel, like, and the white man clubs the guy on the back of the head, takes the barrel and starts to walk away. And Axe is like, that's him. That's Visser 4. That was the guy.
Right. Obviously, this is out of place for what these normal shipmates want to do this to each other.
Yeah. Axe cuts the ropes to, like, open them up and then starts to morph to human as Marco's like, catch up with me when you can. I'm chasing him. It chases after. He follows him.
The kids in human form, for all intents and purposes, look like aliens to people of the past. They are in
They're
silver,
wearing, like, bike shorts and...
Right, yeah, they are in outfits that are undistinguishable from aliens from outer space.
He follows a bloody footprint, which is how he kind of tracks him through the ship, and sees the Visser, like, waddling with the barrel, sort of, like, almost, like, slowly pouring something out of it, and he sees, like, a black powder pouring in a trail out of this barrel. Clearly it's gunpowder. So Marco starts to morph to gorilla, and, like, sneaks up on the guy as a gorilla, and then it's like, hey, and throws a punch at him. But as he does...
Wait, how does he talk? Does he sit?
With,
does
with
he
thought speak.
Okay, he thought speak. Hey, look behind you. And then he fucking gorilla yes. grogs
but
him.
But as he's punching, something rocks the ship. And he misses the punch, and Visser 3 clambers out and runs.
Okay.
Or Visser 3, Visser 4.
Visser
sorry,
4.
Not Visser 3, yeah. Fun fact, Visser 3 is not in this book.
Okay, great.
A chase then ensues. We cut to Rachel, who finds herself suddenly standing amongst a bunch of soldiers readying cannons, like below the deck, and they're like, whoa! Why is there a woman here? A stowaway? What's sure. going on? Like, you know, sure. like that kind of shit. And like, whoever's in charge down there is like, shut up and look forward. Like, eyes on your cannons. Like, get your shit ready. Like, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then they start firing the cannons because they're, you know, it's that time. And as they fire the cannons, Rachel sees a man run up through the hatch, like behind her. And she's like, oh, interesting. And then she sees a gorilla clamber up after him. And she's like, oh, shit, I should be joining that.
That's the person I should be going after.
And chases after. Tobias also ends up joining in and is a bird trying to fly, like, within this ship zone, like, after this guy. And in the chaos of a naval battle now around them with cannons flying and things pinging off of masts and stuff, the Visser climbs onto, like, the rigging of ropes and starts climbing up the ropes, which trips up Tobias because he, like, gets caught in kind of, like, the sort of net sort of nature of that rigging.
Sure.
Marco is strong, but isn't a super, like, fast climber as a big-ass gorilla.
Sure.
So Rachel morphs a chimpanzee.
And just takes off straight up.
And starts flying up the rigging after him. And he turns to see her, and she can see, like, fear in his eyes as this, like, very angry chimp is, like, flying up this rigging after him. And, like, hand over hand, and, oh, a rope, like, broke and is gone. It's fine. She grabbed another one and is, like, going up and just...
Yo, if that chimp gets there, say goodbye to your balls, bro. That chimp is gonna go chimp-tastic on them.
Visser 4 was as high up as he could go. The junction of the highest spar crossed the mast. He was clutching the mast. Now where do you go, Yerk? I asked him. Get away, he cried in a shrill voice. I don't think so, I said. Your personal history ends right here, right now. No, let me live, and the time matrix. You know you want it. Where is it? You'll never find it without me, he said. I laughed. It's a ship. It's only so big. I'll find it. You can't kill me, Andalite, he begged. Oh, but I can, I said. You killed someone I love. I shot up the mast, hand over hand, 3 seconds, and I would... Falling. I was falling straight down. Face up so I could see half.
He had it on him!
No. Falling. I was falling straight down. Face up so I could see half a chimpanzee still clinging to the mast. Falling, spinning now, the realization slow and seeping into my dying brain, I'd been blown in half.
Oh no, just by the cannons going off!
Yep. Darkening eyes saw Visser 4 crowing, laughing, and cut to someone else's point of view.
I guessed one death. I wasn't prepared for two.
I know. Tobias watches as half of Rachel falls.
Throws up again instantly?
Well, Tobias is a bird.
Oh, okay.
Calls to her, but knows that there's no hope. She is dead. Also does not get a response from her.
Mm.
Gives chase. Axe links up with him, and they follow Visser 4 back below the deck. And they catch up to find him with Marco as well. So all three of them kind of get into the room with him at the same time. They find him with a hand on the time matrix and a pistol in the other hand aimed at the ground where a trail of gunpowder is. He fires and then disappears with the time matrix. Axe cuts the trail of gunpowder with his tail, but the spark from his tail striking the ground ignites it. And Marco has just enough time to say, oh, shh. And then
we cut to a nude reality.
Cut to. So Tobias opens his eyes and because everything like he like shuts his eyes expecting an explosion. And then everything is just silent. So he opens his eyes and he finds himself on what looks like a college campus, like very old-fashioned buildings, like stone buildings, guys in sports coats walking around. I looked beyond them, using my hawk eyes to see through the windows and into classrooms. Had to be a college. The kids were too old to be high school, although they looked strange. Short hair, crew cuts even. And something else. They were almost all men. The professors were exclusively male. Here and there was a girl student, but not many, and then I noticed something else that took even longer to register. Everyone was white. Everyone. It wouldn't be easy spotting Visser 4 here. His host body was white, and about as clean-cut as these people. I called out in ThoughtSpeak. No, not Jake. And not Rachel either, unless there'd been some kind of miracle. Marco, Axe, Cassie. Was that all of us? Four left alive? And maybe not that. Maybe fewer. Maybe just me.
Oh, jeez Louise.
So he flies into an open dorm window, morphs into human, and steals some clothes, like a uniform.
Right.
He also finds a textbook.
Was it that Texas University where that guy went to the bell tower with the sniper rifle?
No. I opened one of the books. It was stamped, Princeton University. The publishing date of the book was 1932. That didn't mean this was 1932, but it didn't mean it was any earlier than 1932.
Right, right.
It was a history book. I whipped it open and scanned the contents. Revolutionary War, Revolutionary War. No listing, but there was a listing under Rebellion, Colonial.
Oh, no!
I flipped to the pages. I found what I was looking for. The rebellion collapsed following the disastrous attempt by rebel leader George Washington to attack British allied Hessian troops. The rebel troops attempting to cross the Delaware River were ambushed by Hessian allies who had been alerted by a local resident. The result was a massacre. Washington was mortally wounded, dying 3 days later while in British custody. Local resident, Visser 4. I sucked in air. I'd been there. How long ago? 150 or so years ago? Or just an hour ago? They didn't mention the death of an unknown rebel. A boy with a bullet in his brain. I scanned the contents page again. Another word jumped out at me.
Dolphin.
Trafalgar.
Okay.
No mention of Rachel. No mention of gorillas or hawks or a chimpanzee. The entry simply explained that the British Navy had been defeated by a fleet made up of French and Spanish ships. Admiral Lord Nelson was killed when his ship, Victory, was sunk by an explosion below the waterline. I shook my head. I didn't even know how it was supposed to turn out. I'd never even heard of Trafalgar. Didn't even know what war it was. I closed the book. I raised my eyes and saw a flag flying from the tall pole. It was pale blue, with a small British Union Jack filling one corner. Princeton University was not flying the American flag. No one was flying the flag of the United States. There was no United States. What was in its place? I don't know. But the United States of America had died on the sleet stormy night on the Delaware River. Suddenly, down a wide alleyway between tall buildings, a dolphin appeared.
Oh, there's the dolphin. I knew a dolphin was nearby. And if nothing changed, it should be the Union Jack, but that's neither here nor there. What does the dolphin say?
So Cassie had, like, back in the ship's time, in the Trafalgar time, had basically been in kind of like that fugue state almost, like unable to deal with Jake's death, trying to sort of numb herself by just being a dolphin. But although the whole time in her mind, she's like arguing with herself of like, no, you have to go back. Like the other Animorphs need you. Like the other people are still alive. Like you gotta snap out of this basically. And she decides, no, okay, fine. They need me. I need to get my shit together and go. And basically the moment she decides that, she suddenly finds herself as a dolphin just on a cobblestone alleyway, like beached essentially, or at least her dolphin brain suddenly starts screaming like, oh my God, you're out of water. Stop it. So she starts to demorph as Tobias gets to her and is like, yeah, hurry up, demorph. Like, stop being a dolphin. A couple of guys come over and are like, what the hell is that? to her. And Tobias is like, you wouldn't get it. Don't worry about it. Like, go. She's fine. It's fine. Just go. But then one of them...
it's about to get fucked up.
As she's, like, finishing morphing, one of them looks very concerned after... realizing, oh, and this is his words, quote the book, it's a colored girl. And one of them with a southern accent asks, how did you do that? And then the book, and this is from Cassie's point of view.
And by do that, he means be free?
Well, he means morph, but this is from Cassie's point of view. He says, how did you do that? He demanded. And then, like some vile punctuation, he added a word I will not repeat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We all know what that word is.
Yeah, 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 ding dong. Keep going.
Tobias gets pissed and is like, what the fuck did you just call her? But that guy is like bigger than Tobias and like shoves him and like puts him, you know, sure, like shut the fuck up kind of thing. And says that... my note says, Tobias gets pissed and the dude gets continually more racist and says she's probably a runaway slave.
Yep. I'm not saying she's a runaway slave. I am saying that's what they think in there, okay? Yeah. I am agreeing to continue telling, listening to the story. Yes.
It is a very uncomfortable time.
Okay, yeah, it's much. I'm uncomfortable right now.
Yeah. So, and then in reference to, like, from Cassie's point of view, in reference to Tobias, she's like, well, Tobias would need to, like, morph Hawk before he morphed anything with quote-unquote muscle to, like, deal with these guys. But she says to us, but it was okay. But that was okay. This small battle was all mine. I didn't want any help. You don't like black people, Mr. Davis? I said pleasantly. No problem. I could turn white. Watch me. Most of the time, I'd probably have let it go. I'd been called names before. I'd run into racism before. Mostly, I figured people like that were just sad, weak-minded fools. So most of the time, I just avoided people like that. But I had been in three wars since breakfast. I had seen Jake shot down. I had just learned that Rachel, my best friend, was gone. I was sad and ashamed and filled with rage all at once. So this wasn't most of the time.
Did she turn into a polar bear?
She turns into a polar bear.
The biggest fucking polar bear you've ever seen. Not those sad sacks of shit that are on our planet now. A real polar bear.
And as she does, Tobias kind of sits back and crosses his arms and is like, you guys might want to run. Like, she pins the guy down, this Davis guy.
Mauls his face. And this is this is Jefferson Davis, right?
No, this is not Jefferson Davis. This is some white guy in like the 30s. I'll tell you later. We find out it's 1934, but whatever. She may be a descendant of him, though.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
He does have a southern accent.
Sure.
So she morphs polar bear and then pins this guy and puts her jaws, like she like turns her head and puts her jaws straight up like over his face.
Yep.
Around his face. And then roars just as close to his face as possible.
And she instantly gets a whiff of shit as it ejaculates his body.
He crumbles into a blubbering mess immediately. And Marco comes up and is like, wow, that is so Rachel. who, remember, Cassie just found out was blown in half.
Yes.
And then Rachel walks up and goes, yeah, what, are you stealing my act? And everyone's like, what?
And then Jake shows up?
No. But then everyone else does. So Axe and Marco and Rachel all show up. So it's everybody but Jake here. And the last thing that Rachel remembers is she was climbing the rigging as a chimp, and then boom, she's here.
Oh, interesting.
So they interrogate this guy about when they are, and it's 1934. But obviously time is all different. They don't know what the plan is or why they're here at Princeton. And Cassie suggests maybe Visser 4 outsmarted himself. Like, if he came here for something specific, but now that time is different, the thing he came here for isn't here.
Right. 100%. You're changing so many things in time. You're expecting this teacher would be there, but if that teacher, and I'm talking about a Jewish teacher, FYI, okay? I'm just letting everybody know. A smart, intelligent Jewish person did not make it here.
So Marco goes, ugh, you'd have to be like Einstein to figure this out.
And one of the
racist guys is like, Einstein, you mean that like physicist? And they're like, yeah, is he here? They're like, no, he's in Germany. What are you talking about?
Oh, geez, Louise, he never left. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then one of the guys is like, well, now that you mention it, I did see in the dean's office, there was some guy like ranting in there about Einstein.
Sure. That's our Visser 4.
Exactly. And they even are like, did he have like a slash on his face? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, Visser 4.
Damn you, slash face.
So Cassie says to Rachel, Tobias saw you blown in half, Rachel. Why are you back? Why are you alive? And why isn't Jake? I don't know, Rachel admitted. The Drode said Krayak had demanded a life in payment, Axe pointed out. The terms were negotiated between the Krayak and the Elemist. Perhaps the Elemist had his own demands, and that it be only one life. And Tobias said, wait a minute, do you mean the rest of us can't die? And then Axe says, I am speculating. I would not wish to test my theory.
Right.
So
they gotta get to the dean's office.
So Marco points out that the mission is no longer just, we gotta get and stop Visser 4. Even if for revenge, like now it has to be, we have to get the time matrix because we have to fix all this.
Right.
Right. And then they all kind of like are looking at him like he came up with something brilliant. And but they're like not saying anything. He's like, do you not get it? Like, we need to go back and fix time. And then it sort of dawns on him. He's like, oh, does that mean we could save Jake? Like, if we go back and rewrite time, could we stop Jake from having died as well?
David, that's the power of love. That's how time travel works.
Axe looked doubtful. Krayak demanded a death. He got a death, Tobias said. Jake died. Is there a law that says he has to stay that way?
No, there's no laws, David. There's no laws. We're rewriting the books right now.
Suddenly they start, like, changing time location quickly. Like, they suddenly are in a mall, and then they find themselves in ancient Greece, and they look up and, oh my god, there's the Parthenon, and, like, shit like that. And Axe is like, oh, he must be trying to extend, like, the elasticity of the echo effect, essentially. If he jumps a bunch of times really fast, maybe he can put more distance between us and him.
Sure.
So they start going all over a mall, ancient Greece, the Civil War, and then suddenly Marco finds himself in a small steel boat with an open top and soldiers all around him, ocean water splashing in his face.
They're going to Normandy, baby! That's D-Day! Operation Grudge!
And a guy, like the guy at the back, the sergeant or whatever, is like, where the fuck did you come
Hold
from?
Hold on. Not Operation Grudge. That was a UFO project. I don't remember what
Operation
the
Operation Overlord was.
Thank you.
So Marco's like, where are we? And the guy's like, well, we're in the English Channel, but soon we'll be in Normandy.
Right.
And Marco immediately is like, oh, shit. And then the guy is like, yeah, oh, yeah. Anyway, let's go. And the door drops, and immediately that guy is shot multiple times in the head.
Sure, of course.
And so Marco, like, ducks down and immediately is having flashbacks of the Delaware River incident,
mm-hmm.
But also starts shrinking down, morphing a fly, because he's like, I don't have any morph that can tank all these bullets, so I need to get small enough that they don't hit me.
Yeah.
So he morphs down to a fly, and he does manage to kind of get up and away, and he can't quite see things from that far, which he's like, is totally fine with me. I don't want to see what's happening underneath
me. You mean the trauma that's happening to him, seeing the meat grinder that is human existence?
I was glad I didn't want to see what was around me, but I could not block the fly's sense of smell. I smelled, tasted the spilled blood and drained body fluids. I couldn't help but smell them. D-Day, the smell alone would haunt me for the rest of my life.
Just like it does our grandfathers.
Yeah. Axe appears in the water and manages to, like, make it to shore, but then is flung by an explosion, and is, like, lands on the ground and is, like, feeling winded. And he's like, oh my god. And he's spotted by Tobias in the air above. And he does tell Tobias, like, are you okay? And he says to Tobias, I am not injured, but I must tell you, I am profoundly tired of your people.
Ugh, yeah.
From war to war to war. Not a great look for humans.
The 90s America is a pretty great place to be. Everywhere else is a little bit sketchy.
Cassie also calls out. She managed to get to bird mode. She appeared here, like, underneath, like, a little outcropping, like, in a cliff, and just morphed to bird right away and then flew up into the air. Axe starts morphing into his Harrier to also get wings and get clear of everything. But he gets pinned, as he's shrinking, he gets pinned underneath a wounded soldier who, like, falls on him and is, like, screaming for a medic. And Axe watches as the medic runs up and is like, I got you, buddy. We're going to get you out of here. And the guy's like, I don't want to die. And it's, you know, a whole Saving Private Ryan scene. Up to and including the part where, like, a bullet ricochets off the medic's helmet. And he's like, oh, fuck. But then keeps, like, working on the guy. And Axe is like, oh, my God, what courage. And then immediately that guy gets shot in the neck, falls over on the guy, and both of them die.
Jeez Louise. Okay.
So... Axe kind of starts having a little mental wrestle with himself of, like, I could just lay here. This isn't my war. Like, why do I need to... And then he kind of goes, no, I have a duty. So he starts to, like, remorph and push himself free and get out of there. Cassie and Tobias in the air spot Visser 4 in a jeep leading a column of tanks towards the shore. And the column of tanks is coming. The jeep is pulling a trailer with the time matrix in it.
I thought it was just big enough for your hand.
No, it's as tall as, like, a Hork-Bajir almost.
Wow. Okay.
Which is, like, 7 feet tall.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. It's like a big thing. And so the Visser obviously had shown up to tell the Germans about the real beach assault that right. is happening this day, as opposed to the decoy one that is what led to D-Day.
Right. They thought it was going to be about they thought it was going to be up north further, and mm-hmm. they also thought there was going to be an invasion of not Poland, one of those other neutral countries. They mm-hmm. they like tricked them that they were going to be there instead.
Yeah. Yeah. So the tanks are about 10 minutes from the beach. And Tobias is like, you know, if we can't find the others or if they don't get close enough in time, Cassie is like, it's up to us. This is D-Day. Like, we have to stop the Nazis. Like, this right. is where the Nazis get stopped. And Tobias and Cassie land in the bushes ahead of the column of tanks and then morph to Hork-Bajir and Wolf, respectively.
Yo, I don't feel like the kids utilize the alien morphs enough. I'm really excited to see
Tobias
them.
Loves his Hork-Bajir morph.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And so while they're kind of morphing, they're kind of like, are you thinking about that whole, like, can we die or not thing? And they're like, yeah, but I don't want to test it. You know, sure. they're like, yeah, of course. So they, as it comes by, they leap at the Jeep. They kind of sprint from the bushes and leap at it. One of the soldiers manages to get a bunch of shots on his machine gun off, and Tobias just gets riddled with bullets and mm-hmm. goes down. Cassie leaps into the Jeep. Hits Visser 4, grabs onto his arm, and they both, like, roll out of the Jeep and onto the ground. And it's at that point she notices that Visser 4 is handcuffed.
Oh.
He was not driving the Jeep. He was sitting in the Jeep and was...
Yeah, the Nazis... Apparently... Yeah, the Nazis yeah. found his occult shit and says, we're taking this back to the Fuhrer.
A white English-speaking guy showed up and suddenly and was like, I have information for
yeah,
you.
And they yeah. were like, nine, motherfucker, let's slap some yeah, chops on you.
Cassie also mentions she notices now that he had, like, a fresh cut on his head that was, like, hastily bandaged. So they clearly, like, beat the shit out of him and then tied him up.
Sure. Nazi justice.
The others are still a ways away in the air from Cassie and Tobias. Axe is filled in about World War II. He's like, Marco, you seem to be familiar with, like, this war. And he's like, oh, yeah. And they talk about it, about what's going on and everything. And Rachel mentions the Holocaust. And he's like, and this was also the Holocaust. And Axe is like, what do you
mean? They tell Axe that the bad guys are marked with skulls on them. Like,
yeah. But she's like, she tells him, he's like, what do you mean the Holocaust? And so she explains to him what happened in the Holocaust. Yes. 6 million Jews, 3 million, you know, however, 12 million total, 14 million total people, right? Like all the different people that were put in camps and stuff. And Axe is like shocked and again wonders like, what the fuck kind of species are humans?
We're a special kind of fucked up, everybody.
You know? Cause he's like, you know, the Andalites fought each other long in the past. We had wars against our own, but like we still never killed children. We still right. never killed non-combat, you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. And Marco's like, oh no, we get it. It's bad. That's why this war is happening. Right. Like, you know, like, but Axe also then contemplates the officer that he was attacking back in the Delaware River time that he was like leaping at that we didn't quite get to see if he killed or not. He absolutely cut that guy's head off.
Oh, great. That's good.
Well, Axe is like, well, he's like, in that moment, Axe was like, these guys are just doing, like, they're not the enemy here. They're just the Hessians who, like, where time has changed now. But it was in the moment right after Jake died and he whatever. So now he's feeling guilty about having, like, murdered someone who he shouldn't have.
Whatever.
And Rachel is like, well, you guys can go, like, deal with the time matrix or whatever. I'm gonna fight Nazis.
Of course.
And then meanwhile, back with Cassie and Tobias. Tobias just sits up. Remember, he had just been riddled with a ton of bullets. He sits up and kind of, like, feels his chest, and there's no bullet holes.
They can't die.
And he's like, oh shit, we can't die. And then Cassie just gets shot in the head as a wolf, and then is like, ow! Oh, I'm fine. Like, yeah. And so then all the German troops around them are like, what the fuck is going on?
You're telling me they just turned on God mode in Doom and are about to go berserk on these bros? Yeah.
So they notice the insignias on these soldiers are also wrong. There's like a mix. They're like a half and half mix of the French tricolor, like red, blue, white, right?
Yes.
And like the Nazi like eagle, the like
it's America's
black.
Colors. Is it literally? It's just America's shit. The it's French all tri-color. Red, white, and blue, and eagles. Yes.
But then also like that Nazi like eagle insignia, yeah. And some of them are speaking French, so they thought speak to them, which transcends language, right? Because the Cassie notices that Visser 4 is like slowly trying to inch his way towards the Time Matrix like trailer. And so Cassie tells like whoever seems to be most in charge at the moment, like, don't let that guy do that thing. And the guy like is like, oh yeah. And like hits,
you know, and all hits the and all the guys are like, suck it up, blue, someone's talking in my brain.
And then a German officer arrives in a Jeep to like see what the hell is going on. And oh boy. So he gets like briefed by whoever's here, like someone clearly talks to him explaining what's going on. But seeing a Hork-Bajir sitting there beside a seemingly tame and unkillable wolf was new. He leaned close to Tobias and gingerly touched his wrist blade. I won't hurt you, Tobias said. The captain answered in German, and then tried French, and finally, excellent English. Do you understand English? Yes, we do. He snapped his head around. There was a quick burst of German, including a word that sounded like wolf, and another that was very recognizable. Frankenstein. He thinks you're a monster, Tobias. Then, in English, once more, he said, I do not know how a monster and a talking wolf come to be here. Explain. I started to answer, not to explain, because explaining would have been utterly impossible, or at least it would have taken a solid week. But then, I saw the old man who'd been driving the captain's jeep climb down from behind the wheel. He was in his 50s, at least, although his uniform indicated a low rank. He was stocky, not very tall. His black hair was parted high on his head. His eyes were dark and intense. He wore a small mustache. It's a Hitler. Style of mustache known everywhere as a Hitler mustache.
I like first off, it was Charlie Chaplin before all of this, but that's fine.
Well,
so Hitler's not the main guy.
Hitler is a driver, just a low-ranked Jeep driver here.
A low, vegetarian, art student driver piece of shit.
So Marco and Axe and Rachel are trying to figure out how to stop this column of tanks from reaching the beach. Marco and Axe decide, you know what, we'll help you in this Nazi fight. The road that they are traveling on is very narrow. If one in the front were to, say,
break down,
become unmovable, it would block everyone. And so Axe has an idea. He's like, hey, I see all these, like, small handheld explosives that people are throwing. And they're like, grenades, great idea. The hatches on top of the tanks are, like, all open right now as they're, like, traveling towards the beach.
Drop those bombs.
So they find a guy who's, like, got a box of grenades and is handing them out to soldiers. And Rachel's the biggest in the Bald Eagles. She's like, I'll grab one. You know, but I need him to be distracted while I dive to get it. So Marco and Axe, that's you. And they're like, got it. So they dive and Rachel dives like 20 seconds later to do this like coordinated swoop and grab. And right as they reach to this group of guys kind of handing supplies out, a mortar shell hits the middle of all of them. And blows, including our three birds, just blows them away.
They're all holding explosives. So yeah.
Cut back to Tobias and Cassie. Literally the moment that they see Hitler get out of the truck, Tobias stands up. He's a Hork-Bajir, right? Blades all over himself. Stands up, runs over to him, grabs him like hostage mode around, and puts the blade to his throat.
He says 999.
Immediately. Yeah, like, immediately. No hesitation at all.
Yeah.
The soldiers dropped cigarettes and canteens, swung around, and leveled their guns at Tobias. You know who this is? Do you know what he is? That's Tobias speaking. And then Cassie responds, no, and neither do you. Look at him. He's like some old corporal or something. He's Hitler. He dies. End of story, Tobias said grimly. Hitler was frozen with fear, trembling with a Hork-Bajir blade pressed against his jugular. Tobias, it's all different, I said. Visser 4 changed it. All of it. No one is where they should be, doing what they did in our reality. We don't even know if these guys are the bad guys or the good guys in this reality. He's still Hitler, Tobias said. Is he? I don't know. Jake, in that other reality, the reality that comes from all this, was Jake still Jake? Was Marco still Marco? You've got to be kidding. You're going to compare Jake to this walking piece of scum? He's not evil for who he is. No one is. You can't be evil for being someone. It's what you do, and this guy is just a driver. From behind us, a new and sudden sound. Boom, boom! The first tanks were firing down on the beach. Tobias, you can't do this, I said. You can't execute someone for what he might have done or even what he might do. Release my driver, please, the German captain said tersely to Tobias. Visser 4 leapt, shackled hands outstretched for the time matrix. I bounded after him. He took 3 steps. I took 2. I clamped my jaws on his leg. Pop, pop, pop. The captain fired point blank at Tobias. Tobias jerked in reflex, his wrist blade cut deep. The driver, Hitler, fell to the ground.
Oh my god.
Visser 4 rolled with me on top of him, rolled over, pulling me with him into a shallow ditch, and overhead I saw the surreal vision of a bald eagle, 6 feet from wingtip to wingtip. So then Rachel, Axe, and Marco shake off the explosion because they're invincible.
They're invincible, they're in god mode.
Rachel finds a grenade and grabs it and carries it into the air. And they're like, great, well, how do we pull the pin? And Axe is like, I have an idea. And flies up and then turns around and dives toward Rachel. And as they fly each other, he flips upside down and uses Clink. His talon to grab the pin. And they use the force of them passing each other to pull the pin.
Fuck yeah.
And Rachel starts cackling like a maniac. Like... And to the point where she's like, I really wanted to, like, scream and cheer. And maybe I did, because then I heard Marco say to Axe, look at her. She's nuts. She loves this shit. Like, you know, like... as Rachel drops the grenade into an open tank hatch, she sees Tobias shot in the face as Hitler's throat gets slit. Mm. And she even is like, is that Hitler? Like, you know, like, there is chaos all around that area where Tobias and Cassie are. Many of those soldiers are shot or hit or hurt or wounded. The grenade blows up in the tank, and a second explosion that like, triggers blows the turret off of the tank, and it lands... Boom! On the lower body of Visser 4.
Oh, no!
Pinning him from, like, the waist down under a flaming tank wreckage.
Yeah, he's dying, but I'm happy, I guess.
Everyone congregates around, and then demorphs to, like, human, or their whatever their base form is. And Cassie starts trying to, like, comfort some of the wounded soldiers, you know? But some of them just straight up, like, die as she does.
Right.
And then Visser 4 kind of looks at them and is like, humans? Like, humans this whole time? Like, you know? Like, what the fuck? And then Tobias is a hawk again, sees a Yerk leave his ear, and swoops and grabs it really quick.
Yep. Then a man starts screaming that there's a flaming tank on top of him.
What should I do with him? I asked. Marco held out his hand. He took the Yerk. We can't let him get a new host. We can't take him back to our own time. He knows now that we're humans. We leave him here. He dies slowly of Kendrona starvation. They say it's a horrible way to die, Cassie said. Marco held the Yerk out to Axe. No, the Andalite said. I have enough to answer for. Axe looked to Rachel and then looked away. No, Rachel said as Marco offered the Yerk to her. Not me either, I said, which I believe is Tobias's. Yeah, this is Tobias's point of view. Not me either, I said. I see, Marco said, nodding slightly. No one's anxious to add another stain on their conscience. Everyone's had enough? He flipped the Yerk almost casually through the air, threw it straight into the flaming hulk of the tank. Starve or burn, Marco said, trying in vain to sound tough and indifferent. His only choice is, this is quicker. We have to end this, Rachel said, sounding sad and sick. No, not yet, Cassie said. There's still the time matrix, and there's still Jake. How do we do it, I wondered. Go back to each place we went, and... We need to cut the chain of causality early, Axe said. If we can stop this controller from finding the time matrix in the first place... No one said anything. We stood listening to the massacre on the beach, the roar of tanks trying to force a path around the far side of the burned-out Hulk. Good guys or bad guys? Had we turned the battle for better or worse? My turn, I guess, Cassie said softly. I guess none of us will get through this without some terrible sin, and this will be mine. What are you going to do? I asked her. She walked over to the former controller, now just a human being. What's your name? Someone told us, but I've forgotten it. Who are you? So... his name is John Barryman. He's an actor. He almost immediately knows that he's dying.
Yes.
Right? And he says, you kids, you're heroes, you know that? The Yerks, they hate you so bad. He laughed. He coughed and choked up blood. Don't know how you did it, he rasped, following him through time. He was trying to change the world. Bitter, very bitter. Change time, make humans weaker, easier to conquer, then replace Visser 3. But it was too complicated for him. He didn't realize. Landed here, expected Nazis. Told the Germans this was the main invasion. Rushed the tanks forward, only different Germans. They arrested him. Too complicated, see? It was too complicated for us, too. He wanted to kill Washington, wanted to change Trafalgar, kill Einstein, push the Allies back to the sea at D-Day. Other plans too, but you made him rush. Panicked him. Why Agincourt? Tobias asked. John Barryman laughed. That was for me. It was to shut me up. I never gave up, see? I fought him. All night I'd keep it up. Keep it up in his head. Keep what up? Marco said. Shakespeare. I played Exeter in the play, but I memorized all the lines. I shook my head. I don't get it. Henry V, that's what it is. Henry V, not Richard III. I don't know my Shakespeare. Henry V. I know it by heart. Shakespeare wrote a play about Henry at Agincourt. Visser 4 couldn't figure out how or when to intercept Shakespeare. Not enough definite data. So he was going to kill Henry to silence Shakespeare and to silence me. I always like that detail.
So that's funny. A fun detour mission to get the thing inside of his head to shut up.
To shut the fuck up, yeah. So Cassie then asks him, I'm so sorry, but did your parents ever tell you how they met? And he understands. He like kind of is like, what? Why would you? Oh, I see. So he tells them, like, yeah, 1967, San Francisco, like, this is his name, this is her name, like, that kind of stuff.
It was at an LSD house. An orgy was going on all around.
I could feel my friends draw back from me. Cassie, the killer with a conscience, the Drode had sneered. Kill him and then cry over him. I wasn't going to kill John Berryman. John Berryman would never exist. So Axe controls the time matrix to get him back to 1967. They argue in the street about, like, what to do, where to find them, or whatever. They end up, like a hippie woman comes by and is like, whoa, far out, what are you guys doing? Oh, shit. Like, and kind of, like, overhears a lot of the conversation and is, like, trippy, weird. And then they're like, well, do we, like, if we have the time matrix, can we also, like, fix history? Like, can we go and, like, just make it so the Holocaust didn't happen? Just make it so this and that didn't happen?
No.
And essentially, they're kind of like, no, we can't fuck with stuff like that.
It'll change the course of history too much.
But then, all of a sudden, they're just, where is it? Suddenly, they're just standing in Cassie's bar. All of a sudden, again. And Jake is there.
Yes.
And, it turns out that the hippie that they distracted was John Berryman's mom.
Who never met his dad.
And that distraction meant she never met the dad. And so none of this ever happened. And Jake is like, what the hell just happened? Like, why was I just riding across the Delaware River and now you're all here talking about a hippie lady? Like, what happened? Then Cassie
says... Cut to the Drode.
Well, Cassie says, you died, Jake, I said. You died crossing the Delaware with Washington. I could see the spasm of shock on Jake's face. Oh my god, he whispered. In the end, did we do it? Did we put it all back? Did we make it right? I went to him and gave him a kiss on the cheek. No, we didn't make it right, but we put it back, Jake. Leave it at that. We put it all back. The end.
The Drode didn't even come back.
No. The Drone doesn't like them, except for when he's torturing them, right?
And so. The kids now have the time matrix?
You know? No. It would be wherever it was still hidden, because it was never found in the first place.
It was never found, right. They then did it, and then once they stopped John Barrymore, they literally just showed back up at the barn.
Berryman, but yes.
Wow, John Barrymore is dead. That means we never get Drew Barrymore. Do you realize that, David? We never get E.T.?
No, we just get a different person in E.T. Mm. E.T. would have still happened without her.
Well, I have a lot...
Well, you could argue that it wouldn't be as successful.
It would not be as successful, but I think Steven Spielberg has enough to answer for.
There's still some Spielberg magic in there, yeah.
Listen, I have a lot of notes on Steven Spielberg, so let's get to my lessons.
Let's do it.
Lessons.
First lesson right out the bat. There's no good Davids. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Just what I think about. There's not one that comes to mind.
Not even a lesson of this book, but I'm with you.
I wrote free the slaves. Just in general. We shouldn't live in a world with slaves.
If ever there is one, there shouldn't be. Is the lesson, yeah.
I wrote poor Jews.
Then
wrote, we are all equal. You are a human being. You came from your mother's womb. We are all the same. We have different operating systems, but I promise you, no one is above another human being.
And this podcast, in general, would like to take that stance very publicly.
I wrote, you know, from this story, I realized that forced birth is a great topic for children's book. I just feel like to know more about that. I wrote, French writers are no joke. Listen... go back through history. They are killers. They did a lot of fighting
France
for a
gets
long
this
time.
Weird, like, rep as surrender happy, you know, wimpies, but, like, yeah, no, they are war-forged through history.
Be a clean boy. Listen, there's a lot of diseases that are going to follow you. The better you can be a clean boy,
keep
the better.
Keep up your hygiene.
And that's right, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, child soldiers need therapy / mushrooms. These kids are broke, and they are going to have to deal with this stuff one day, hopefully in a clinical setting so they do not kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the power is a great saying. I just love saying it. Anytime anyone says it, it's a great thing. I wrote Sleepy Hollow is a great movie. I know some of you might not like it. I'm telling you, it's a Santel favorite. Go watch that movie. It holds up. I wrote, life is a knowledge. Life is a journey of knowledge. Every day you learn something new. Just because you're not in school anymore doesn't mean you turn that off. Every day you should learn more.
Yeah.
Knowledge is power.
Similar note, but yes.
I wrote that any, I just in general, you should follow the man who is, if a man is chained and is being followed by a gorilla, you should follow and find out what's going on. Just in general, whenever that scenario brings to mind, you should go and do that. I wrote, we got to protect, when around chimpanzees, protect your balls. That's where they go. They go right for your weak spots.
Or your face.
I wrote, I learned the lesson that the past sucks.
Yeah, pretty much a lot of times in it.
I learned that you should slash your enemies' faces. That way you can know who they are at all times. You'll have
an easy to identify person. Yeah.
I wrote, history is just his story told by the winners. You change one domino in that equation, everything changes. I wrote, Germany's not always the bad guy. I know that in this book it doesn't feel that way, but just know that they've only been causing havoc for a drop of time in the galactic sense of history. I wrote, PTSD is real. I wrote, Steven Spielberg ripped off the Animorphs for the movie Saving Private Ryan. I wrote, humans are a fucked up species. We're just awful. We're just the worst. You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, I know what you mean.
I wrote that I learned today that the Animorphs would kill baby Hitler if given the opportunity.
At least two. Tobias and Rachel probably would both. I mean, we know Tobias would. And I figure Rachel probably would.
I don't know about that. I think Jake would do it too. I think these kids are a little bloodthirsty.
Jake might do it. Jake might do it.
I wrote, we're all just men of our time. You know, we judge people from the past, but we don't understand the things that have made them. Worldviews and all of those things. We're all just men and women of our times. I wrote that Steven Spielberg ripped off the Animorphs for the movie Minority Report. They're talking about thought crimes. He was reading this book and just ripped off all of his next movies. And then I wrote, kill baby Hitler. That's what happened. That's what would have happened.
You know, there was no negative consequence from that.
None. They killed Hitler the driver in that weird time. Nothing ever happened. And then
things kind of calmed down, honestly, after that.
I guess so. I feel like this story is a great, what would you call it, morality play, just in general for World War II. Listen, we might have won that victory, but there's blood on everybody's hands all the way around.
Yeah.
David, I'm not happy the predictions that I guessed that came true. I don't like it. And even though our kids are children, I don't feel that they are children anymore.
Oh, they are so far past having to have, you know, grown up.
So far past. Just like we are far past our ending time. Who knows? Just FYI, David's going to have to edit the shit Megamorphs out of this episode.
Yeah, we had a lot of interruptions too, which is a problem, but... Megamorphs also always are like, they're like double-length Animorph books.
That's right. So we will close this episode of Storytime right here. David, what book are we doing next time?
The preview for next time. We are back to regular numbered books. We had, this was like our season, you know, our season finale, and then we're going to move on to the next. We are on Animorphs number 30. It is called The Reunion.
Ooh!
The front cover is this. It is Marco, and he is turning into a cockroach.
David, that book says something, right? Before the cockroach, though, it says something. What's that blurb say?
Oh, it says, watch Animorphs on TV, that one?
I think that's a pretty good idea, David, but we'll put that feather in our cap for another day.
Yeah, and the inside cover is a cockroach on, like, a bedside table.
With Chinese money. That's like a Chinese, that's like a foreign currency.
There is some foreign currency there. Yeah, you're right.
Ooh, I wonder what that has to do
with it. And it looks like a set of house keys.
David has not read the story, so he can't allude to anything.
I mean, I read it years ago. I haven't reread it in my adult life yet.
But... David, stop stalling. It's time to end the episode.
I do know something crazy that happens in this book, though, so we'll see. We'll get there.
Save it for next time, which we'll be back for. The one who is a fabulous storyteller on top of all IT troubles at all times. Well, that's David Miller.
And the one who's such a good listener, well, that's Michael Santo.
I didn't hear what you said, but that's okay. Thank you for joining me, David, and we'll see all you kids and cats next time.
Okay, bye.
That's
it's our show. Thanks for coming round. Don't be sad, no need to frown. We'll have more stories, don't throw a fit. Goodbye, one and all, and we'll see you in a bit.
Oh boy. Are you ready for this? Strap the book in.
I'm ready for your strap on, David. Let's go.
3, 2. Oh my god. Literally, the moment my cat starts yelling at the door, the moment I start counting down.
You are psychic with your cat. Your cat knows always the perfect time to ruin the show.